You're listening to the cycling podcast Femina, powered by Super Sapiens, energy management for committed athletes and coaches.
Well, welcome to the cycling podcast Femina. And can I say, for the first time in several months, it is normal service as usual. No, normal service resumed. I can't even get that right. So
Hold on.
Oh, sorry. I'm getting too excited, Rosie. You're too excited. I know.
I would say introducing these two is going to be like putting on a pair. Oh, I should say my name's Rose Manley. I've totally messed this up. You see how out of practice I am. But introducing these two will be like slipping on a pair of your favourite old battered slippers, won't it?
Oh,
my co-host.
My lovely. Never washed, falling yeah. apart, maybe once looked quite good.
Well,
I'll keep them round for familiarity.
Yeah.
That's us.
So that is Orla Shenoui and Richard Moore.
Am I right foot or left foot?
Hello.
Hello. Am I right foot or left foot?
Well, as I'm looking on you on this Zoom call, you are right foot.
Oh,
and Richard
perfect,
is left
perfect.
Foot.
That's what I've always wanted to be. Excellent.
But there's something, I guess being right foot sounds better, doesn't it? But why is that? What's the bearing on that?
There's a funny thing in Northern Ireland, when I was growing up, that the other side always kicked with the left foot. And I didn't realise this because I always assumed, growing up Catholic, that it was the done thing to say that Protestants kicked with the left foot. But I didn't realise that Protestants always said that Catholics kicked with the left foot as well. So there you go. It's just the other, really. So Richard, you are the other.
That's fine. I'm happy with that.
Wow. Well, have you missed me? I've been gone for so many months.
Terribly.
Well, yeah, welcome back. Welcome back and congratulations,
like a
Rose, because
tatty, comfortable bathrobe.
Yes.
We started this call with four of us, didn't we?
We did. And that wasn't including the two of Orla that we could see.
No.
Orla's two angles.
I had a slight technical mishap. I was like, you can never have enough of me. You will watch me in double vision. No, then we had baby Rose as well.
Yes, little baby Tamsin, who is still the spitting image of my partner. So it's like carrying a little baby Phil around, really, with me.
Aww.
I do often think that people must think, why is that woman carrying her boyfriend in miniature form around with her? But
I find this whenever Eve was born, I don't know if you get this, but sometimes whenever the babies are born, they look really, really like their fathers. Mm. And so Eve looked, in my head anyway, she looked really, really, really like my husband. And I remember waking up in the middle of the night and seeing Moore's face beside me. And I was like, whoa, Eve's head has suddenly become massive.
But apparently that is actually an evolutionary thing.
Yeah,
that is,
to stop
the man running away.
Yeah, because if you've been sleeping with everyone in the village, at least you know whose is whose. So it's,
Isn't that terrible?
Very effective, though, because I stuck around.
Why doesn't the man just believe her? You know, you could just go with faith and trust.
Yeah.
I thought it was actually because the man is such a narcissist that he falls in love with the baby because it looks like him.
Right. Could be that as well.
Could be a bit of that in there as well.
Well, anyway, I should say that even though this introduction feels like it might feel like it's taking forever, we have actually been chatting for the last hour and 22 minutes. We've only just started to record.
It's only when we got to the point where we thought we actually need to finish this podcast at some time tonight.
Before
that we
midnight.
Start it.
Never mind.
I'm glad that we're all us three witches are back together again. That's
lovely to be back
Hubble
in the chair.
Bubble, toil and trouble.
Yeah, nice to be back together. Well, we've got plenty to talk about. Well, I always say we've got plenty to talk about. But, I mean, this is the beginning of the new season. There's a number of new teams popping up in the women's peloton. There's a number of big transfers. There's all sorts going on. New races, of course. We've got big, big new races coming. So we've got plenty to get on with. We're going to be picking out our things to look out for the rest of the season between us. But before all that, as every podcast should start, with Orla's news roundup.
Shouldn't it just say every podcast in the world?
Every podcast will stop, yeah.
Yes. We're going to start actually with what has been the biggest news to come out of the world of women's cycling since we last met. And it's horrible news, and I hate to even talk about it, but it is important. And that is the crash involving Amy Peters. If anyone has missed this, she was training with the Dutch track team in Spain in December. She crashed and lost consciousness. She was airlifted to hospital, put in a medically induced coma. She is now being treated back in the Netherlands. And SD Works released an official medical update saying that she has shown improvement. She is breathing on her own, but she is still unconscious. So we obviously send all of our best wishes and prayers and thoughts and love to Amy and all of her friends and teammates and family. We just hope she gets back up and running as soon as possible and that she is well. On to racing then. And there obviously hasn't been much racing. We're only in January. But the Australian neo-pro Ruby Roseman-Gannon won the third stage and the overall at the Santos Festival for bike exchange Jayco. Nicole Train of Roxalt Liv Schramm finished second overall, with Maeve Plouffe of Ara Pro Racing Sunshine Coast in third. Now, I was looking down through the top 25, actually, is how far I got before I found a non-Australian in the GC, and that was the Irish woman, Megan Armitage.
Well, fancy
of
that.
Team Westpac. Well, I didn't make it up. Megan did it all by herself, or probably with the Team Westpac support. But I will give a shout out. But I was just looking to see how many non-Australians were in it, actually, because obviously the race has changed and become almost entirely a Southern Hemisphere, really, since transferring from the Tour Down Under. And another Australian, Georgia Baker, continued the bike exchange Jayco run of success at the Santos Festival of Cycling, taking out the women's criterium that brought the racing to a close.
And who was the highest finishing Irish rider there in that race?
Oh, I don't know. Oh, now you put me on the spot. Maybe Megan again. I don't know. She's probably the only non-Australian
racer.
Still
in the green jersey.
And that's it, really, in terms of road racing. Other news, though, we've had a bit of an upset between the two unions of the women's peloton, the CPA Women and the Cyclist Alliance. Now, the CPA Women is a union that's recognised by the UCI. The Cyclist Alliance, the hugely respected organisation who've negotiated on behalf of riders, they assist on legal matters, educational support, career, retirement advice, etc. Now, an article published on the Cyclist Alliance website raised concerns about the introduction of a centralised prize money management system for the women's peloton. So it's a system that really mimics what happens on the men's side of the sport, and it involves, among other things, taking deductions from a race's prize money to go towards various costs. So, for example, doping control, admin of the CPA, etc. The CPA's announcement of the new prize money system for the women's peloton led to the Cyclist Alliance responding with some questions, some concerns, and that's the article that they published. And it outlined the big potential decrease in women's prize money if the CPA were to implement the exact same management system as they do for the men's peloton, so as I just outlined. Then the CPA came back very strongly, saying that they reserved the right to sue the Cyclist Alliance for false information disclosed with a clear intention of defaming the CPA. They went on to say that the Cyclist Alliance were sharing fake news and that they had a lack of credibility on the topic and manifest superficiality in its communications. Now, the Cyclist Alliance, from what I understand, are quite bemused as to what the fake news could be. They simply asked the question, if you were to take the men's system and apply it to the women's system, what will this mean? Will it mean the reduction in prize money? And the CPA have gone in hard, really. I have to say, reserving the right to sue is a far cry from suing. I reserve the right to earn £1 million tonight. It doesn't mean I'm going to do it. And it is quite classic legalese. Who knows? Who knows if anything will happen? But I did ask the Cyclist Alliance if they wanted to give any statement in this, and they said that they would rather concentrate on the issues at hand, which are protecting the riders and working for the riders. And it was the riders' representatives who actually brought up the question to begin with that they were asking the CPA about. So a bit of a shame, really, to see such strong wording, I think, and when both are supposed to be working on the same side.
Well, that's the point. That's
quite
the
a
point.
Bit of internal politics. That,
yeah, that's yeah. the point, isn't yeah. it? I thought it was embarrassing and appalling from the CPA. I mean, what on earth?
Understated, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the minute anybody uses the phrase fake news, they lose the right to be taken seriously, I think. But there are so many things for the CPA to be angry about, you know, and the Cyclists Alliance and what they're doing is not one of those things. No.
yeah.
And I mean, that style of communication is just, it's just amateurish. It's embarrassing. Mm. It's not befitting a professional sport at all. If they've got a problem, then, you know, have some dialogue.
Take it to them. Yeah. But, and that's what the Cyclists Alliance have tried to do. They've tried to reach out to them privately and try to speak to them away from public statements, because that's the only way you'll get anything resolved.
Yeah, I mean, the kind of threatening tone of the communication is, it makes you wonder what the CPA are scared of when it comes to the Cyclists Alliance, because Cyclists Alliance are doing it, from what I can tell, a really good job. Ellen Van Dijk was one of the writers who responded on Twitter to the tweet put out by CPA Women saying, "Dear Women CPA, I don't think this is the best way to contact, but I feel like I need to react to your statement." I think that is, as writers, we ask the Cyclists Alliance to ask questions, as we need transparency around the prize money platform. All we need is answers instead of a threatening statement. Well put.
Yeah, and that's all they were asking. That's all it was. It was asking questions, really.
And those, and they were
accusing
also
accusing the CPA of anything.
Yeah, they were also, you know, perfectly legitimate questions. If you consider that out of the prize fund money, which is, you know, the money that should be awarded straight to the riders on
which
the men's
is
side,
very limited in
which
the
is
women's case
exactly,
anyway.
It's very small anyway. But 13.82% of that fund on the men's side of cycling gets taken to various things, a transition fund, which is meant to be for, you know, post-retirement, national riders associations, of which not all of them are, you know, recognised under the UCI, doping control, which is on top of the doping control money that the races give them. The CPA's admin itself, CPA takes 2% of the fund, and a development fee for the fund itself, which is 1.82%. So that's perfectly legitimate to ask questions about, are they setting up a system in which these riders who aren't going to get a huge prize pot anyway are actually going to lose almost 14% of that to various other stakeholders?
Still guessing on fueling? Not sure what or when to eat or drink on rides that matter? Never again. Optimize your fueling strategy with real-time glucose data, actionable insights, and personalized analytics. We're here to help you achieve your performance goals. Go to supersapiens.com for more on how to track your energy levels and fuel for success.
Thank you very much indeed to Super Sapiens for their continued support, title sponsorship indeed, of the Cycling Podcast, the Cycling Podcast Femina, and everything that we do. We're very grateful indeed to them. As well as wearing the Super Sapiens sensors, you can now wear the Super Sapiens energy band. I'm actually wearing one there, probably see, so I can monitor my blood glucose levels as we're going along. It's a great way of keeping tabs on that while you're exercising or on the bike, rather than looking at it on your phone. You can look at it on the energy band. You can also look at it.
You haven't shown us that tab before. That looks really cool, actually.
What's that?
Can you see then your live, can you do a live glucose
reading?
Yeah,
I only got it last week. So there's the energy band.
Oh,
there's,
wow. I wonder what it would say after my 5.5 pre-podcast.
Well, I was
going
to say,
digestives.
I think we need to wire you up, Orla, if only to test the Super Sapiens technology to see if it can cope with you.
Oh. See if it can withstand the level of chocolate digestive
Six
consumption.
Chocolate digis as we warmed up.
Six and a half
as we warmed up for this episode. I'd love to know what your blood sugar is at the moment. So that'll be the mission.
The
next episode, we'll get Orla hooked up with Super Sapiens. But thank you very much.
And
to
how
them.
Does talking to us, Richard, compare to exercising?
Oh, very similar. Very similar. Well, no, but
very loaded
no,
it's question,
actually,
Rose.
One of the real eye openers is to see how adrenaline or nervousness, as you know, I always get very nervous before doing the podcast, and even
are you nervous, Richard?
How that can stimulate your blood glucose production as much as exercise, or you know, it's your body is controlling it, obviously, and it's not just a simple case of, you know, kind of food in, blood glucose up. It's you can see that at night when you're sleeping. It's up and down according to what you're dreaming about.
Up and down in the middle of the night.
Very much. Very.
Wow. Yeah, really.
Yeah, big spikes and and some dips as well. So it's.
Do you ever go back? We were having this chat actually with my husband and my mum earlier about dreams and whether you remember them or not. But if you remember a vivid dream, can you go back and look at your blood sugar level and see what it was doing?
I haven't done that.
That's fascinating.
No, I haven't. I can't say I've done that. But I'll try.
I would.
I'll try.
Eat some cheese tonight. See if you can give yourself a cheeky little nightmare. See what it does. But it might actually be the reaction to the cheese rather than the nightmare. Mm.
Well, let's see how all the adrenaline and nerves will play out on your blood sugar level, because it's time for Motto or Notto.
This is excellent.
I'm sure everyone is expecting the usual cryptic. I still, after all this time, it's been a year, still can't say it. Cryptic criterion. But I thought I'd bring back Motto or Notto, because that was a real hit at our Christmas quiz 2020.
I mean, we've been inundated like every 6 months with one person saying, "Please, can we do it again?" This is for you, Mum.
This is for you. So I thought I'd do. We also didn't take a tally for the cryptic criterion from last year. So
I won.
All the glory is on the line right now for this quick Motto or Notto. Motto or Notto is, of course, everyone will already know this naturally, but I'm going to give the motto or the catchphrase for a current team. Could be in the Women's World Tour, could be in the Women's UCI Pro Team rankings. And you're going to tell me if it is a motto, which means, yes, it is an authentic, genuine catchphrase, or a Notto, which is just something that I've just made up.
I have to say though, Rose, what I really love about this game is how self-explanatory the title is. That's the beauty of it. But I love how you've gone to such effort to explain it anyway.
Well, I'm just that's thinking, dedication. You know, to me, I mean, to be honest, I actually came up with a name.
Motto or...
I came up with a name before I came up with the game.
Before the game.
But I just want to be clear.
So you're reminding yourself what it means.
Yeah, because I literally did this about 10 minutes before we started. So, okay, here's your first one. Are you ready? This is the
phrase. Hang on a minute. Ripping you to shreds.
Yeah.
I can't remember. How do we then? Do you direct one at both of us, or do you put our hands in the air?
No. You both just give your answer, don't you?
Shout out.
It doesn't matter.
Motto or Notto.
It's either Motto or Notto.
We shout out. Yeah.
I get that bit.
I want to know who wins, Rose. Yeah. You both answer every single one. You both answer them.
Fine.
Okay.
Fine.
Right, so this is the first one.
I remember this
one.
Being strategic before. Yeah.
Okay. Yes, it is strategic in the end, isn't it? Okay, so the first one. We spark success. Is that a motto?
Please, Notto.
So you're both saying Notto.
I bet it's a motto, though. I knew it.
You know what team?
Oh my life.
SD Works.
Hey. Oh, no.
Shut the front door. SD Works were having words.
They've got a little spark, haven't they? They've got a spark on their jersey.
Yes, exactly.
Oh, well, man alive. Okay.
So that's a zeros all round. Okay. Next
one. I think
it's
zero for SD Works. I'm sorry to say, much as I love
motto.
The team.
Okay, number two.
Set it alight.
Hashtag ride us.
That's a motto. And if it's not, it has to be. That's a motto. I can reveal. Oh my God, please let it be a motto.
That I'm afraid it's a Notto.
1-0.
So it's 1-0 to Richard.
No.
I know we all dearly love that to be
motto. Sugar. Should we make that at the cycling podcast motto?
I mean,
riders.
I don't know if there is such a job as motto creator, but you should be that person.
Yes, I am. I am it now. That's it. The cycling podcast hashtag ride us. I love you when you've up with that.
Someone is going to clip that. Someone is going to clip that.
I'm so glad you're back. This okay. is wonderful. Right, next one.
Number three. Breakaway to challenge. Breakaway to challenge.
That's
got to
be a motto.
That's got to be a motto because it's really dull. It's really dull.
You are both correct. You're both correct. For an extra point, can you tell me
UAE?
Which team it is?
Is it UAE?
Okay, Orla, what team do you think it is?
Breakaway to what again?
To challenge.
Oh. I don't think any of the big teams have changed their mottos, have they? It's clearly a non-English speaking team.
Just give us your team, Orla. Come on.
I'm acting like this is Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, where I get like a little bit of kudos for trying to work it out.
I feel also like you're just trying to gauge my faith a little bit by just putting these, you know, theoretical things out there. Go on.
I think he's a good one. Damn you, Richard. So I'll go Uno X.
I'm afraid it's Canyon SRAM.
What?
I can actually, the full thing is, hold on, let me, it's,
guys, I feel like we're probably making a lot of enemies.
Yeah.
Amongst decision makers in these teams.
Yeah.
I can see us going to interview riders and them saying, no, you took the mickey out of our motto. Not speaking to you.
Do you know what? That's fine. Because we'll say, yeah, but look at our motto, hashtag ride us. You know? So we hit them in the face with self-deprecation.
That'll give us a lot more credibility, Orla. You're so right. The whole thing is ride to advance, race to inspire, break away to challenge. I just took a little bit of it.
Oh, God.
Okay.
I think it's better as a whole, but anyway.
As a whole thing, you think
it's
works better.
No, it's not. It's like stand out, innovate, succeed, you know, let's just a word soup basically.
Yeah, okay, so it's 2-1 to Richard. Okay, so this next one is
what was that finger in the air, Richard?
Okay, number four, farto powered.
What?
Rose, I think your expression's giving you away. You normally got farto a really good poker powered face, but that is
I'm gonna go motto. I bet it's like a Scandinavian word or a brand of something.
I'm afraid.
That's Uno X.
Again, it is a notto. It's another notto. So that's another point.
Why
to
are you
Richard
coming up with really crazy things that could never be unless it's a motto?
Because Team Farto is a genuine real team.
You're kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. Team Farto BTC is a real team.
Oh, man. What are they sponsored by? Heinz? Big Beans?
I don't know. But there you go. So I was hoping that there might have been in the back of your minds the knowledge that Farto was a genuine team.
Okay, so I knew it had to come from something genuine, because otherwise that's just ridiculous.
No, Farto. No, but it should be there. Farto powered.
They've missed the trick.
So, okay. Now,
I prefer the nottos so far, quite frankly.
I know, but
they're
I do
way more fun and memorable. What's the point of a motto
exactly
you forget?
To be honest, I do. It was harder this time. I feel like in 2020, I had an absolute pick of amazing ones, but maybe people got scared and they got rid of their like ride and shine and they got rid of all of those, you know, hilarious mottos. Okay, here's the last one, but I mean, it is Richard has, you know, it is 3-1.
That's okay. I prefer the two that I chose anyway.
But, okay. Sweat equity. Is that a motto or a notto? Sweat equity.
Sweat equity. That'll make me really angry if it's a motto, which probably means it is. That will make me really, really angry. So I'm going to go notto because for my sanity's sake.
Richard, what do you think?
You're going to go motto.
Sweat equity.
I'll go motto for the hell of it. Is it EF? It's typical.
It is a motto. It's not EF.
I don't think you're going to have to guess who it is. Oh, well, I'll let you guess, but it's a pro team.
I don't want to know.
It's not a world tour team. It's a pro team.
It's awful. I think it's Team Farto. Is it Team Farto? That would have been good.
It's not
sweaty Farto.
It's InstaFund Pro Cycling. And sweat equity is indeed their motto.
Imagine if it was an equitable sweaty Farto.
So, well, congratulations, Richard. That was
first blood of the season to you.
Yeah.
And commiserations to all the teams who had a motto in that game, because they were
awful. I don't know if it's a good motto or not, but I did learn a team motto today: ride the future. Whose motto is that?
Ride the future.
Ride the future. Is that Michael J. Fox?
Can it be a men's team or is it a women's team?
No. Well, it's a men's and a women's team.
Oh, okay. Ride
Cofidis,
the future.
Cofidis. No.
FDJ.
No.
I'm trying to think because I feel like I looked
Jumbo?
Up a lot
Jumbo.
Of them.
Jumbo Visma.
Ah.
Yeah.
Jumbo.
Yeah.
Ride the future.
I spoke to Richard Pluke today and he dropped that into the conversation, which is... That's a real skill, to drop the team motto into an interview.
Some of those you've mentioned, Rose, I
can't see them popping up in interviews.
What, sweat equity? You don't think Farto Powered will make it in? You're joking.
You see, teams should come up with something like that, though, because then they become totally memorable. You know, what's your mission statement? We are going to break away to challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, please. Yeah. We're in the peloton of success.
Look, they just kept springing out of you now.
don't take all the good ideas away from the next round, please.
Yeah, that's true. Well, I mean, unfortunately, Team Farto and InstaFund Pro Cycling, aren't the teams that we're going to be discussing today, because we are focusing in on the Women's World Tour, which has had a big boost, as you said, Orla, 14 teams now in that top rank. Tell us, what teams, what riders, what races are taking your fancy. Richard, let's go with you first.
Rose.
Don't nick mine.
I mean, it's interesting, isn't it? We're going to hear from Linda Jackson a bit later on, whose team Tibco, Silicon Valley Bank, has joined forces with EF. EF are the new sort of co-title sponsor of that team, but it's very much her team. It's not part of the EF Easy Post team, the men's team. They've just got the same sponsor. So we're going to hear from her a bit later on. And it was interesting talking to her about the Women's World Tour as well and how it's evolved. And Orla, I remember you and I were in Innsbruck when the UCI kind of unveiled their plans for the Women's World Tour and how it was going to develop, how they were going to add 5 teams each year. And they're not quite there. They've got 14 instead of 15. But I think most people would say that the way it's developed has been surprising to me, that there have been enough teams wanting to make that commitment to be Women's World Tour.
That was a big question, wasn't it? Really?
It was a big question.
Salary.
Yeah, and I think, 5, 10, and then 15, they were the ambitions of the UCI, and I think they'll be probably quite happy. And I think as races like the Tour de France Femme, also Paris-Roubaix Femme, develop in importance and prestige, it's going to become a more valuable status to have, having that guarantee of being able to ride those races. But in terms of what I'm looking forward to this year, one team that I'm kind of curious about is SD Works, actually, because... I mean, you told us the very sad news about Amy Peters, and obviously great uncertainty about whether she's going to be able to be part of that team this year. But it's a team that's really gone through a huge transition. They've obviously lost Anna van der Breggen. She's a sports director now. Chantal van der Broek Black is also retiring after the classics and becoming a sports director as well. Although... on Pro Cycling Stats, it seems to suggest that she will ride until the end of the year, but I'm pretty sure she's retiring after the classics. You're both agreeing with that. But apart from...
Pro Cycling Stats doesn't tend to favour women's cycling, does it, often?
Well, that's another subject. But it's a team, though, that has gone through a lot of transition, because there are only a couple of riders on that team who've actually been there beyond last year now. They've got a lot of new riders. I mean, they've got three new riders this year in Marlon Rooser, Kata Blanca-Vass, who was a sort of stagiaire for them at the end of last year, and Lotte Kopecky. But seven of the other riders only joined the team last year. So 10 out of the 13 are really new to the team. One of them, Demi Vollering, is the rider you expect to step into Anna van der Breggen's shoes as the sort of leader of that team. But judging from her Instagram feed, she's been skiing. She spends a lot of time with her dog. And I was relieved today to see that she's on a training camp on her bike. So she is training. seriously though, she's got a lot of expectation around her this year. After the season she had last year, I think she is going to be one of the stars this year. But I do think it's going to be interesting to see how that team gels and works together, given the enormous transition that they've gone through last year and into this year.
Well, I think it's all kind of connected to Anna van der Breggen, isn't it? Because, I mean, she's been the linchpin for the team for many years, and they're kind of building their race strategies around Anna van der Breggen. And if she doesn't have the legs, then it's picking a different leader from the squad on, you know, a particular race. So I think they've managed it incredibly well with Demi Vollering last year to see Anna van der Breggen working for Demi Vollering. I think that was a great way in which they were kind of slowly...
Great transition.
They're kind of passing the baton on to Demi Vollering and giving her that leader experience. Whereas, you know, normally if you had a world champion like that on your team, you know, you wouldn't risk trying a younger rider who was more inexperienced. But, you know, they did that and built that up. I mean, for me, also Blanca-Vass, you mentioned there, Richard, she seems like a really exciting prospect. She came... fourth at the World Championships, and she had the road race, riding for Hungary, which obviously was they didn't have a full national squad there by any means. And but also, I think she came fourth at the Olympic mountain bike race as well, I believe. So, I mean, she has a lot of raw talent. She's only very young. And I'll be really excited to see what she can do and how they can build her up into the squad as well.
It just goes to show as well, it's funny when you mention Innsbruck, Richard, because I feel like that's no time ago. But when you put it into the context of women's cycling, it was a long time ago. And you think how much competition and how much strength and depth there is across the upper tier now of women's racing compared to back then, you know, and when Bowles Dolmans used to just dominate absolutely everything. We don't have that anymore. You know, there's so much competition and there are so many teams that different riders can now go to and pick and choose between that offer them different strengths. That it just makes me realise as we're sitting talking just how exciting actually the women's scene is right now and how excited I am about the season ahead with the new races, with the new teams, with more women's world tour teams, and just with it all getting stronger all the time, stronger, more professional, and also more youngsters coming through, you know, more really young talent that is able to transition into women's professional racing from a much younger age, the way we're spoilt with in men's racing, and we haven't really been able to see, you know, we don't see, I mean, still we get, even the younger riders will often have a degree of something or other behind them, you know, and a second career option. But they're not having to come into cycling so much later now than they used to, you know, and that I think that is a really good sign of where we are in women's racing, that it's a viable career option as riders are coming through. That's by the by.
But I mean, I think we've also, you know, at the moment, there's this proliferation of new teams and whether it's, well, I know you were saying, Richard, that obviously EF Education First, it's not the same team, but they're obviously a sponsor that have seen that it's, you know, sponsoring a men's team has worked and wants to support the women's squad as well. I think that's such a positive thing. We do, of course, have Uno X, which is a brand new team to the Women's World Tour. And it's kind of unusual to have a new team come in at that level. It used to be that teams had to go through the continental ranks for a couple of years, I think, before they could become a World Tour team. But we've got Uno X coming in right at the top straight away. Have you seen anything particularly interesting about that team, Orla, that has piqued your interest?
Well, Yeah, it's more. That's the team I want to pick. That's the team I'm really, really, really energized by and really excited by, partly because of the way they've gone about forming the team. And I was really blown away by the conversation I had with Eleanor Barker last year whenever she announced her pregnancy on the Cycling Podcast, and the story that she told of announcing to the team that she was pregnant. Because before she had even signed, she found out that she was pregnant. She was far on in negotiations and she could have put pen to paper, decided not to. She told them first of all, and she said the initial reaction, the very first thing that she got in reply to letting them know that she was pregnant, was a huge and heartfelt congratulations, you know. And to contrast that with Lizzie Deignan, whenever she announced her pregnancy just a few years ago, she said it. She told a lot of people before she finally got someone, and it was one of the Santini sisters actually were the very first to actually say congratulations as the first thing. But Eleanor said it was entirely, we're behind you, we support you. And for a new team to do that, I think is phenomenal when Eleanor's making this transition in her career. So I find that really, really encouraging. The fact that their minimum salary is set at above the minimum salary for the Women's World Tour. So it's already set at the Pro Tour team for the men. I just feel like they have got the organisational ambition behind them to make them an exciting prospect. None of that's sexy. You know, none of that is necessarily headline grabbing. It's not what gets... Well, I was going to say it's not what wins races, but it could well be, you know, because you know that you've got a professional outfit behind you. But they're the kinds of things that I didn't think we would necessarily get to see in the women's peloton so quickly when we were talking about the introduction of the Women's World Tour. And for that reason, they really excite me. And obviously then they've got some really exciting talent. You know, Hannah Barnes taking on her leadership role. I think that's going to be really great to see. Joss Loudon, obviously the world record holder. Suzanne Anderson coming from DSM, and I chatted to her about her transition last year, and I think she's quite nervous about stepping out of domestique duties, but really, really excited about it, and I can't wait to see what she can do. Hannah Ludwig as well. They've got an awful lot of talent there, and they all seem to buy into the same mission, and they're all energised by the fact that it is a very professional outfit, and that can't be underrated. So I'm really, really excited to see what they're going to do of a presence they'll be.
Shall we hear from one of those riders who has moved across from Canyon-SRAM, Hannah Barnes? I spoke to her last week about why she moved and what she expects from her new team. We'll hear from her in a moment. Now let's hear from Hannah Barnes. So Hannah, yeah, I mean, a fresh start for you this year. You were at Canyon-SRAM for 6 years, a long time. And I guess for a lot of people, you were very kind of closely identified with that team. What prompted the move? Did you just feel it was time for a change?
Yeah, I mean, I think I was at I'm in the stage of my career now where a change is good. I felt like I was just getting a bit stuck in the motions and just needed to do something a little bit more challenging and, yeah, just find a different team and environment to be in to close out my career, really.
Is that how you're looking at it, that this will be the last sort of move of your career?
I'm not sure. I'll keep an open mind, but I've got a 2-year contract and I think I'll be 30 then. So I don't know if I'll be at the stage where I'm just going to try and think of my next step in life. But yeah, for me, it was just they approached me in April and I had a pretty hard decision and a big think about it. And I just felt like it was something that didn't really want to turn down and just, yeah, took the opportunity as something I wanted to do, really.
What was it about it, this team in particular, that appealed? I mean, it's a kind of ambitious new setup. The men's team, very ambitious as well. And what was the vision that they sold to you?
I mean, I think the vision for me was just the development side. They're not going into races expecting to win. They really wanted to develop, especially the Norwegian and Scandinavian side of cycling, and be the first Norwegian team to take part in the Tour de France and all these races. And I think definitely coming out of the training camp and seeing the riders, I mean, there's 18 and 19-year-old girls on the team and they're so young, and it just takes me back to me being that excited and enthusiastic to get racing.
I guess when you throw a new team together, there must be a lot of excitement, nervousness. I know you've met your new teammates now at training camp. What was that like? What was the atmosphere like at that camp?
Yeah, it was really good, actually. Because I'd actually missed the December camp just from being in New Zealand. And yeah, I didn't feel like I'd actually miss any time. We had 3 days in Norway. And I think all of us coming out of that army base and just those challenges. We came out of there knowing each other really well. And yeah, I'm actually really enjoying being one of the older ones, the ones that they're all coming to for help and advice. And I really hope that they will trust me to actually come to me and ask questions, because I really hope I can help them develop and become one of those world champions one day.
You mentioned the training or the camp in Norway. Tell me a bit more about that then, the army stuff. Was this survival kind of training? The Scandinavian team seems to like this.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, we got there on the Thursday at about 11 in the morning, and we're told, right, everyone put your phones in this bag. And it was pretty much phone and watch ban for 48 hours. So no one knew the time, no one could contact home. 48 hours of just getting to know each other. And then we went out on a track day, so just drove some cars really fast. Then had a super nice three-course meal that Thursday. And then on Friday, after a couple of meetings, we just went straight into army camp and, yeah, just packed a bag of the essentials. And we're split into teams of six and then given a potato and onion and a bar of chocolate to last us the next 36 hours. So it was pretty cool.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, where were you? I mean, were you in the kind of the countryside, in a forest or in the hills? What was the kind of environment like?
Yes, we are just north of Oslo, and they have a huge army barracks there. So yeah, there is actually the Norwegian army generals were the ones that were taking us out, kind of... Yeah, giving us advice. We had to at one point light a fire. They just gave us five logs, no kindling, and just a box of matches and said, try and light a fire, which we did. And I thought, we don't really know what time it was because none of us had watches, but it'd been dark for a long time. So we think about, 3 o'clock, we made these fires and they gave us some water in a pan and hot chocolate. So we all made our own hot chocolates and they kept hinting that you should fall asleep now. This is a good time to rest. So we all had our minus 20 degree sleeping bags that they told us to get and slept under the stars that night, well, for a couple of hours. And then at 5 a.m. walked into the sports hall and did a bleep test. So
wow.
Yeah, it was quite an experience.
And how did the onion, the potato and the chocolate, I mean, what order did you eat these things, if you ate them all?
I had Alex Greenfield actually on my team, who's my coach now, and we were all getting a bit hungry. We're like, oh, can we have some chocolate? And she was like, not yet. So she was in charge of the food. But we actually roasted the onion in the fire and boiled the potatoes in the water. So
and then melted the chocolate over the top. Delicious.
Yeah, pretty much. And then we did a 5-hour hike and finished at 12, and there was boxes of pizzas there waiting for us. So
wow.
But it was by the time we actually had food, none of us were hungry. You'd kind of just completely forgot that you needed to eat.
So did it feel like a fun, worthwhile experience?
Yeah, I mean, I'd gone into that camp and I only knew Eleanor and Joss and Julie. And then I just came out of there. Like we all really helped each other. No one had any breakdowns or emotional. We just kind of got on with it. No one complained. They just really got stuck in. And yeah, it was a really good experience. I think for team bonding, it was one of the best things you could have done.
And then you got together on the bikes more recently in Spain. What was that camp like?
It was really good, actually. I mean, I was on my new bike and just getting comfortable on there. And yeah, it's always good in January and February because everyone's at really different stages of fitness and intensity. So I definitely was at the lower end of the fast one, because I've just been kind of just focusing on endurance a little bit over the winter. So yeah, I think training camps are always good to push each other. And it was nice. I mean, we were busy. We had a lot of meetings and everything, but just having like a nutritionist and nutrition meetings, and Karina's there for mental coaching. I think just all that stuff that's around the bike riding is also really important.
It's quite a small team, you know, and a packed program, obviously, now with the Women's World Tour. It's getting busier all the time. You'd be racing a lot, I guess.
Yeah, we will. I mean, they've actually reduced the calendar a little bit. We've got no racing in May apart from a Ride London race, just because they want the staff and riders to just completely have May off and just recuperate a bit going into that busy July that we've got. So yeah, I think definitely coming off camp, you can definitely see that they're going to be really cautious with us. They don't want anyone to train too hard, and come to April and just be really, really tired for Roubaix and those big races. So I think just making sure that no one overdoes it and everyone stays as healthy as they can is important.
And that sort of June, July block is really quite intense now, isn't it? We're looking ahead to the Tour de France Femmes. There's a lot of headlines this week about the men's, you know, X team wanting to ride the Tour de France, but the women's team, of course, will be riding the Tour de France Femmes. I mean, how much do you think about that and how much do you look forward to that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, we're a new team and they'll be the first Norwegian team to ever ride in the Tour de France, which they're all really super excited about. So yeah, I think for us, I mean, we've only got, we've got 12 riders, but Eleanor won't race. So one person has to do both stage races and I've put my hand up for that because I'd quite like to do both of them and just have a big July and then go on holiday.
But I mean, for you and the others, you know, other riders, other teams as well, is Tour de France Femmes, is that the race that you feel that people are kind of talking about and looking ahead to this year? And particularly maybe after Paris-Roubaix, because, you know, the way that really captured people's imagination and gave us such an exciting race, of course, you know, the race lived up to the kind of the hype. Is there a similar kind of feeling about Tour de France Femmes maybe?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think for me, the biggest thing is that we don't race at the same time as the men. It's a completely standalone event. So we won't be competing for media attention and TV time and whatnot. So I think that's probably the biggest thing in my eyes. But yeah, just to be in the Tour de France and to actually, someone's going to be wearing the yellow jersey, I think is huge. And I definitely know there's a few riders on my team that I can't wait to do that stage race. But yeah, there's a lot of racing to come before we get there.
And I mean, Paris-Roubaix being one of them, how much did you enjoy? I saw you in the velodrome at the finish. Yeah. How much did you enjoy that experience? Enjoy is the right word.
Yeah. No, I did. I think, I mean, every male cyclist that's done it just can't shut up about it. and just... people had warned me about the cobbles, like, oh, they're nothing like the Belgium Classics cobbles, and I was like, oh, come on. But yeah, they're nothing like them. It's definitely a race that you need luck on your side. I didn't actually go down in any of the crashes, but as soon as you're held up, it's really hard to find your momentum and rhythm again. But yeah, it was a pretty cool experience, and I'm looking forward to this year and whatever weather we'll get.
Well, we heard there from Hannah Barnes making a change, moving on from Canyon SRAM, joining Uno X Pro Cycling Team. And they are kind of an interesting team to look out for because they've kind of coming in with a good mix of junior development riders and some kind of old heads to kind of lead the team and captain the team. What other teams have we got out there? What else are we looking out for? Orla, God. Oh, no, sorry, Richard.
We've both done ours, Rose. It's your turn now. But I was permission to ask a question? Kit, what's your favourite team kit this year?
Okay.
Can I make an admission here?
You don't care.
I don't. And sometimes I really do. I find my Twitter timeline in particular so saturated with opinion on team kits for weeks.
Because there's no racing.
That I had to come off Twitter.
Nothing else to talk about. You had to come off Twitter as a result of that.
Well, I actually then put out a shout asking people what accounts I can follow because I thought I cannot open Twitter again and see strong opinions on team kits. Because you know what? It made me feel inadequate. I just thought, if I don't care enough about team kits, does that mean I don't care enough about cycling? What does this mean about me? I had an existential crisis.
What does it say about me?
So I'm actually really inactive on Twitter right now, mainly for that reason.
Purely, because, purely.
And then to escape Twitter, you come to the podcast
chat.
And then that's...
I'm terribly sorry I brought it up. I apologise.
This is a confessional here. It's like therapy. Wow. Canyon is my favourite.
Really?
Yeah, true, actually.
I poked an anthill there, didn't I?
Yeah, no, I do really like the Canyon SRAM kit. This will put me in your good books, all of that. I didn't have an opinion about the kit, so I'm just quickly having a look now.
I don't have much of an opinion. Just
well, you brought it up now, Richard. You better stand by.
I mean,
he's made 20 different Twitter accounts just so he can contradict himself. And
that'll also
keep
the
debate
why,
going.
That'll also be why something was missing from your news roundup, which I've just realised, Orla, which was the controversy over the UCI demanding that certain teams change their kits. That ties into the chat you had with Annemiek van Vleuten last year, wasn't it? About she got in touch after we talked about the Women's World Tour leaders jersey and whether there was any value in a rider wearing it.
She thought not.
Exactly.
Well, Richard, you're going to have to tell us now because really, you didn't want the Canyon SRAM kit. And you wanted just.
I believe
we all agreed on Canyon SRAM.
I believe it was designed by friend of the podcast Alton Coyle, who is now at Canyon. He was at Rafa previously, and I think designed the original.
Well,
we're just
totally in his pocket, then, aren't we? We should have said something else.
It's fine. He's very nice, very nice fella, and obviously a very, very talented chap. But no, I think it's quite a hard following his own act, hard act to follow. But it's very, it works really well when you see the team as a unit. With the diamonds on the sleeves and so on, so it's very nice.
That'll be
very
nice from the aerial view as well.
I think that would be a kind of key point.
But I also think, to be perfectly honest, until you've seen any of the kits in action,
it's hard to have an opinion. It is true.
That's my view too. Anyway, let's move on. I don't want to linger too long on this because I can see you getting angrier and angrier, or like the eyes are narrowing.
I do like the Movistar kit, I think it's nice, it's a slight twist on a classic, I would say.
I'll tell you who's going to have the nicest kit this year, the cycling podcast, because I haven't engineered this deliberately, but we have a new collaboration going on with MAP, who produce beautiful clothing, and we're going to have the fruits of that collaboration will be coming later in the year in a very innovative way.
Ooh.
So do stay tuned. But there's going to be some great stuff coming out of our collaboration with MAP. And if you want to have
a
look at
their... Anybody who gives me a kit is my favourite kit. So.
Well, yeah. I received my delivery today, actually.
Yeah, it looks lovely.
My MAP, I was showing it off before we started recording, my deep winter collection.
You did say that you've also gotten, what is it, orange top and bright blue shorts, and I really I got
that last year from MAP, and it's very nice as well, very
striking. And it's orange, it's not orange pink ombre like all the other
it's orange
kits.
It's definitely orange
ombre, that's what they are.
This is very definitely orange. Chat just
it hasn't it,
me.
I haven't been told by the UCI not to wear it,
no.
Put it that way, so
might be told by other people.
I don't want to be mistaken for the leader of the Women's World Tour.
Could happen.
Anyway, have a look, map.cc, have a look if you want to have a look at some beautiful kit.
Wonderful.
Well, what else?
Rose, yeah, I think it was your turn.
Well, it was, and then it got hijacked, didn't it? And then
sorry.
What's your team? Well, I was going to, not because I think they're going to be the ones to watch, but I'd be interested to see how Team Bike Exchange get on this season, because I feel like they had a bit of a wilderness year last year. Annemiek van Vleuten leaving and making, you know, undeniably a huge success of it at Movistar, and you know, kind of, I feel like she fit in that team so perfectly as to kind of bring up the results of other people on the team as well, by having that kind of role as leader there. And I felt like Bike Exchange, I thought that they could have, you know, done more than they did. Obviously, they had Amanda Spratt, who was ill for most of the season, but they really didn't achieve much at all. And they had the achievements they did came from Grace Brown, who's obviously now moving on to FDJ. So they're getting Kristen Faulkner in, of course, but then, you know, where does that lead them as a team? Have they really bolstered their team by losing Grace Brown, or, you know, what can we make of them this season? That'd be my big question.
Yeah, and it's interesting that and obvious that they would make such a big noise about early season success, but as I pointed out in the results of the Santos Cycling Festival, is that what we call it now? It's almost entirely Australian, so it's far from the European or international continental scene. I think they've been a team who've slightly disappointed is maybe unfair, but not necessarily fared as well as we could have expected them to do. So I think they themselves would probably hope for more than that this year, wouldn't they?
Yeah. So I haven't gone for a very optimistic one. I should have gone for something a little bit more optimistic, perhaps. Something more positive.
I mean, it's been interesting. The team itself, I've noticed, getting really behind their results down under, because I think the men's and the women's teams had really dreadful years last year, and they need to pick up this year. So I think they're very keen to kind of hit the ground running and get some momentum behind both the men's and the women's teams, because they're quite integrated as well. I think Faulkner is a great signing. I mean, we'll hear from Linda Jackson in a moment or so, but she was very disappointed to lose her, and maybe wouldn't have lost her had she known about the tie-up with EF and World Tour status a bit earlier. Who knows? But she, you know, if she carries on the trajectory she's been on, then she could be a real factor in, you know, Tour of Flanders, races like that this year.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, Bike Exchange are a kind of well-organised team in that, you know, they were very used to when they had Van Vleuten as a leader, they, you know, were very well drilled in terms of making sure she was in the right position that she needed to be. I don't know how much teamwork really someone like Van Vleuten really needs, but certainly Faulkner will be getting that support in a way that she probably didn't get from TIBCO last year. But had she stayed with what is now EF Education TIBCO SVB, then she probably would have got that support that she would be looking for.
So is there another team that you're looking forward to seeing then? Or is it more sort of speculative, let's see how they get on? Are you being the school marm at the front of the class with the fingers arched, the pads of the fingertips touching, church-like, with a stern look over your...
You're talking to me or Rose?
I'm talking to Rose. I feel like she's sitting there with her marking book ready.
Oh, I see.
To note,
all of these,
like, successes or failures.
No, that's true.
That's the image I'm trying to conjure up, basically. Is there anyone you're excited about, or is it more, I'm watching you?
Oh, right.
Jones, front of the class.
Trek Segafredo. I guess seeing Lisa Balsamo at Trek Segafredo, that'll be fun to see how she kind of fits in there, what kind of results she can get. Obviously, we did just mention that EF Education, TIBCO, SVB, seeing how they get along, because I mean their squad is totally different, really, from what it was before as TIBCO SVB. As you all know, Richard, because you spoke to Linda Jackson, who is the founder, and she was very precise, wasn't she, about being called a founder in the interview and not an owner. The founder of TIBCO SVB and has been running it for 17 years, and it's kind of had a big tidal change. So, well, should we hear your interview with her now?
I mean, Linda, I don't really know where to start, because your story with the team is a long one, and it's a story of great survival, I suppose, as well. You know, and I've listened to a podcast you did recently talking about your own career in the 90s, and the environment, the landscape of women's cycling seems completely different now. But I would like to start with the news about the partnership with EF. How did that come about, and was it something that you were looking for?
It was something that I was looking for. As you said, I've been doing this for a long time. And I thought, well, the continental scene is not as rewarding anymore. You know, just racing in the U.S., the state of cycling in the U.S. is pretty dismal. So my choice was, you know, grow the team, stay where we are, or, you know, abandon, basically. And I have a ton of passion for the sport, and it's really been my life since the early 90s. And I decided that I really wanted to take this team to the World Tour status. I have been scrimping and scraping this team on a shoestring budget for 17 years. You know, we gradually increased the last few years. Our partners, TIBCO and Silicon Valley Bank, saw what I was doing and really liked the focus on equality for women and really trying to grow, you know, give them more than I had been able to. And so they were excited about the potential of World Tour, and they stepped up early last year. And I was ready to go with just TIBCO and Silicon Valley Bank, but I would have been doing the shoestring still. I would have been a World Tour team, but I would have been at the bottom of the budget ranking, right? And I just didn't want to do that anymore. And I had been talking to people, several people, and I had been talking to EF through somebody that used to work there for a while. And I reached out to her and said, you know, hey, I'm looking at this. What do you think? And EF was super interested in the concept. They're all about equality for women. If you look at their company, you know, it's a lot of female employees. They really believe in supporting women so they can ride and race full time. And so it was a logical connection with them. And it started coming together much earlier last year. There was a lot of work to be done because I've been, you know, my own team for a long time. And there were a lot of partners that changed, but it's a great, great combination and a lot of synergies. So I'm pretty excited.
And how do your long-standing sponsors feel, TIBCO and Silicon Valley Bank? They've been involved, as you say, for a long time. Do you get the feeling? I mean, what's prompted this step up on their part as well? Is it the state of women's cycling, the opportunities that are there now, the races that are there now? What's led to them deciding to go all in with this?
You know, it's all about equality for women for them. It's a natural extension of their focus in the workplace. And they saw the opportunity to really, you know, provide this environment for women, and they were all about it. They loved the concept of what I was trying to do. And it was just, they were all in. They, you know, doubled their budget and, you know, made the commitment really early. And, you know, frankly, it's been an annual thing with TIBCO and SVB for 15, 16 years. And, you know, this time they were like, and I've been talking to them for years about this. I was a guest on the working panel for the UCI World Tour Commission. And, you know, I flew over for several meetings on how do we do this, and was kind of part of that for a while. And so I was talking to them the first year of the license, the second year of the license, the licensing opportunity, because as you remember, there were 3 years where you could apply for a license. And this was the last year. And so I'm like, TIBCO, SVB, this is the last year we can apply for a license. So I've been through this for 2 years with them, pitching the idea of going world tour and the opportunities it would provide for the women. And so they've heard this from me for 2 solid years already. So this third year, they were like, we get it, we're there. And it was just an incredible feeling to have their support.
I wanted to ask what this new, expanded, more ambitious team that you're now part of, and I know you prefer founder to owner as a description. I also heard you say in another podcast that the collaboration with TIBCO started because the TIBCO founder thought that you had fire in your eyes. So I wondered, do you still have fire in your eyes? Is that fire burning brighter than ever with, you know, what's coming up this year and beyond?
Oh, that's another great question. I still do have fire in my eyes for sure. Right, you've caught me at a bad moment right now. But, it's been a lot of work. It's, you know, people think I'm retired from working. It's an incredible amount of work. But I absolutely have the passion for the sport still. And all it'll take is me getting to camp and seeing the riders. You know, I've got 2 riders staying here in California with me at my house in Menlo Park, and it just, that's the part that really keeps me going, is seeing the riders, seeing that what I'm able to do for them, and really helping them in their careers. That always gets me fired up. The rest of it, all the work to go world tour, that's been crazy. I'm just going to say.
So it'll almost be easier once the racing starts, will it?
It will. This was a really tough year. Applying, the registration process for world tour is a nightmare. It's a lot of work. It's all good, I think. You know, when I look at what we've been through, it really will weed out the teams that shouldn't be World Tour. And so that's all good. But it was a lot of work.
And, you know, the racing, once it starts, it's pretty intense. I was speaking to another rider earlier on who was just talking about how, you know, with teams of or squads of 12, 13, 14, 15 riders, quite small squads, there's a lot of racing. And, you know, particularly once we get into the summer and you've got the big stage races, managing resources is going to be a real challenge, I guess, for your team and other teams.
You know, one thing, so bringing EF on brought us a much bigger budget. And what I was able to do with that is hire a lot more staff. When you're a continental team on a shoestring budget, I still can't believe what Adrian and Rachel Hederman went through these last 2 years with the team. We were basically racing the World Tour circuit on a continental team budget. So Rachel was the lead director, Adrian was the head mechanic, and it was those two. doing the whole season. So with the additional resources that EF brings in, we've really been able to beef up, and you had to become World Tour, beef up our staff. So, you know, we've got two directors. We've got a high performance director. You know, we've got additional Swanee. We've got bus drivers and a bus. Who knew we'd ever have a bus? I've always been vehemently against that. But we have all these extra resources. So, you know, I'm really comfortable with that. I'm honestly not sure what they're all going to do, but I'm sure they'll find something to keep themselves busy. But on the staff side, that's really where the majority of the increase in the budget has gone, because we've always had to keep that really lean, because when I got additional money into the budget, it went straight to the calendar, straight to Europe, because we're a North American team. Every rider that goes to Europe, it's $2,000 on a flight. So the staffing up has been super. In terms of the riders and the calendar, 14 riders isn't a lot. One thing we did with the increased staff was really focus on the calendar. Those guys spent months, you know, fine-tuning the calendar. Should we be doing this race with our roster? And really focusing on lining out the calendar early. And that's also another luxury, right? We never had the resources to be able to do that. So it's a small squad, but they spent a lot of time looking at our calendar and matching it to our roster.
You've had a few changes. Kristen Faulkner has obviously moved on. She was a revelation to a lot of people last year. Was that disappointing to lose her, or is that just part of the sport?
Oh, you know, it's incredibly disappointing. And it's super hard on me, because I really get attached to these riders in the sense of investing in them emotionally. And she's a wonderful woman. She's incredibly intelligent. She comes from the same background I do, you know, in terms of finance / venture capital. I found Kristen, a friend of mine, said there's this local rider. She's got incredible power. You really have to meet her. And I sought her out and I met her and brought her on the team based on this guy's recommendation. She was incredibly green, no experience at all, really. And we took her to Europe and she did it. And super proud of that. She'll be missed for sure. She's, you know, she was our strongest rider last year. So it's definitely a big loss for us. But I'm going to watch her future. I think she's going to show us great things this year. You never know. Maybe we'll get her back some year.
And what about you? How you're heading over to the training camp? How much time are you going to spend in Europe this year? And what kind of races are you hoping to be at?
So being at the Tour de France is definitely a priority. I booked that ticket right away. I'll definitely be there. And that's super exciting. I'm just so excited about that race. And I will go to a couple more. I think I booked Strada Bianchi tickets. I'll probably go to the Women's Tour. We have a lot of staff now, so you know, I don't need to be there. And when I went, it's really just to see the girls race anyways. But I'll get there as often as I can. It's really the highlight of what I do now, is to be able to get to the races and see how these girls do. So,
well, you mentioned that you've got all these staff and you're not sure what they'll do. Maybe you'll have to turn up just to check that they're all doing something.
I'm sure they'll keep busy.
The cycling podcast Femina is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Well, having just watched Orla eat the seventh chocolate digestive of this podcast.
I thought nobody had noticed.
I thought it was a perfect time to thank Science in Sport. Obviously, they perhaps Orla should be like re-looking at the, you know, the nutrition plan for doing a podcast. Science in Sport would be your friend for this, Orla, because they can, you know, give you the energy you need to get through recording a podcast. And yeah, big thank you to them. Obviously, they've stuck around for how many years? When I say stuck around, they've obviously...
2016. 2016 Giro, 2016. They started with us.
Incredible. So yeah, thank you to Science in Sport for supporting.
Seventh year.
Well, there you go. Lucky number seven.
And if you have any chocolate digestive gels in the works, then send them my way.
That would be fabulous, I'm sure.
Oh my gosh. Can you imagine actually a gel that was chocolate digestives with a milk gel chaser? That would be my dream. Ooh. Sitting watching Netflix.
This is this is exactly the kind of brainstorming that they want from us, I think, on science they and need. Sport, isn't it? That's what they're looking for.
This is how terrible mottos come to pass. Yeah,
exactly.
With brainstorming sessions like this one.
Well, to my knowledge, you can't get milk chocolate digestive energy gels from Science and Sport, but you can get a lot of other things in a lot of other delicious flavours, as Lionel has been finding out doing his taste tests on the podcast. But even better, the taste will be even sweeter when you know that you can get 25% off all your Science and Sport products with the podcast if you go to scienceandsport.com and you type in the code.
SASCP25. Come on, welcome back.
Come on, Richard. SASCP25.
Woo! We are back, mother fluffers.
Now that sounds awful in real life, but I'm hoping in the edit that will great. Be seamless.
Oh, beautiful. If anyone's still listening.
Have you ever listened to the podcast back, Rose? It sounds even worse than the podcast. And that is no reflection on our wonderful editors.
Always hopeful.
If anyone's still listening, that before the break we heard from Linda Jackson, the team founder. I mean, what a remarkable person she is. Came to the sport pretty late herself as a rider, achieved great things, an investment banker, and then has dedicated a lot of her life to running a team. And it's quite amazing. Again, Orla, you were talking earlier about thinking back to Innsbruck and even the strides made since then, but I think she's pinching herself at the prospect of what she's managed to assemble this year with a new sponsor, EF, and a world tour team. And, you know, staff, service course, things, vehicles that they've never had before. And I was quite amused to hear her say that she didn't really know what everybody was going to do. There are just so many jobs now on the team. They'll all be very busy, though, I'm sure. But, yeah, it's going to be interesting. We mentioned earlier how Bike Exchange is very integrated with the men's team. The men's and women's teams are part of the same structure. This is quite different. For just the sponsor, really, of the two teams, the men's and women's teams. So it's still very much Linda Jackson's team. And one of her appointments this year as a sports director is Tim Harris, who we know very well, has lived in Belgium for many years, former rider himself. He was at Bahrain last year. And, of course, Lizzie Banks will be returning to racing with that team. And she's the presenter of the service course. She's been a regular on Femina as well. And, we're all rooting for Lizzie, aren't we? Because she had a terrible year last year. I think she's got an awful lot to prove. And she's got an awful lot of talent, as we know. So hopefully she'll have a great season with that team.
Yeah, and a great position, I think, that she's in. Because I think she will be coming in as... You know, if she wants to be the leader, then I think that opportunity is definitely there in that team. So,
I mean, she often appears sort of the number one name on the list. That's the advantage of having a surname that begins with B, I guess.
Well, true. Yeah, they've got. They've got an interesting mix, haven't they? EF Education, TIBCO, SVB. I'm going to have to just shorten that because I can't say that every year.
Yeah, no, I was thinking if they start winning a lot of races, man, these podcasts are going to get even longer.
Yeah. They've got a really interesting mix. They've got a few, they've got quite an American sway, which, you know, makes sense because, you know, TIBCO, SVB, it's all, they're all American sponsors. But it'd be interesting to see a couple of the riders that have come over from Rally, Christabel Durbel-Hickok. She was very active in Valenciana at the beginning of last year. It'll be interesting to see how she gets on. I spoke to Veronica Ewers at the women's tour, actually, because she was briefly in the hot seat at the time trial. And she has got a really interesting background coming from soccer, as she called, obviously, football to anyone else. And
they call it soccer in Ireland as well.
Oh, as an there F1 we go.
We keep going. Yeah.
Oh, gosh. Now I've, you know, alienated quite a substantial part of not only the podcast crew, but also...
all of the Gaelic sport following community that crosses over with the cycling podcast. But anyway, as you were.
But, Veronica Ewers, I mean, she was in the hot seat at the time trial. And
it was only, I think she said, the third ever time trial she had ever done in her life, competitive, the first ever competitive one she'd done, and the third one that she had ever attempted. So she's definitely got a lot of talent, but she's on their team too. What does everyone else make of their squad?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big squad, actually, relatively speaking. 14 riders. If you compare that to Jumbo, for example, they've got 13. The predecessor to the team finished they finished 13th in the rankings last year with 5 wins. I think a lot of the names will be fairly new to a lot of the listeners. Lizzie Banks, certainly the standout star. So it'll be interesting, as you said, Richard, just to see what support she'll get. And I hope to see a Lizzie Banks coming back. And I think anyone who knows her even a little bit will know that she's incredibly motivated anyway. But if you think of the season that she's had in the sidelines and all the issues that will come with concussion and the self-doubt and lack of training, I can't wait to see a fired up Lizzie Banks heading a new team like that. I think that's going to be really exciting. It should be an interesting team to watch, really.
And where do we think this year, because we haven't spoken that much, I mean, we spoke about SD Works at the beginning, but where do we think all these wins are going to go? Because it feels to me a little bit like there's a lot of teams, but there's a lot of teams that aren't necessarily, might even say explicitly, that they're not necessarily going for all the wins this season. They're kind of either there to develop or to, you know, be on a learning curve. I think I've heard a lot of that recently, but where are the wins going to go?
Well, I'd be surprised if they went to Roland Kogias Edelweiss. We haven't even mentioned them.
No,
they're one
that's
of the new
true.
Women's World Tour teams. That's no, it maybe sounds really disrespectful. I don't mean for it to, but I think they're a bit of a surprise in the Women's World Tour. They had 2 wins in total last year, mostly a Russian outfit, but now sort of changing nationality, becoming Swiss. Olga Zabelinskaya is their main rider. That's absolutely not answered your question, but I feel like we should give a little bit of a mention to them because I find them quite unusual. I think it's going to be really, I think by their own admission, they're not necessarily even trying to win very much next year, but just get in the mix. And I guess being a Women's World Tour team, getting direct access to all of the big races to come, like the Women's, the Tour de France Femme. But I think I think we're probably going to see them coming from the same areas, really. I think that the teams who can hit the ground running with the big, you know, we've got the new teams, obviously, and it always takes a little while for that to settle in and bed in. I would imagine Jumbo are going to do very well. They've been strengthened now by Corin, and I'm sorry, Corin's new name,
Lebecki.
I should know. Thank you. Corin Lebecki, previously Corin Rivera. I'm really excited to see what she and Mariana Voss will pull off together. I think that's going to be an amazing one too. I still think SD Works will be winning a lot. And Trek Segafredo. Trek have just energised me and excited me for the last couple of years. And I think that's going to continue.
And Movistar. I mean, I think after her injuries at the Paris-Roubaix, I was quite surprised to see Annemiek van Vleuten off in Colombia riding a lot. And
of all people to not be surprised, though.
Well, yeah, I mean,
surprised by it.
No, I know I'm not surprised, really, her injuries were quite bad, and she's right back in it, and no reason at all, you know, when you think that Anna van der Breggen's been her big rival, she's gone now, the path is clear. I don't think
easy
there was
peasy
too,
well go.
I think she'll be good again this year, but she's part of a team that's really getting better, and Emma Norsgaard was very good last year, and I think she will step up again. I mean, she's still very young and a fast finisher, so she could convert some of these second places last year into wins this year, I think. And I think that team will be good.
And they've got Alenis Sierra as well, who's joined their ranks. Yeah. I think Norsgaard and Alenis Sierra will be really potent in a sprint final, especially those kind of fast finishes after a hard classics race. They'll be incredibly hard to beat. But I did hear that at the Movistar camp in Spain that Annemiek was, you know, training with the men. So,
course,
you know, going out and bossing it there. So I guess be afraid, everyone else.
Are we excited, beautiful people? Is that an obvious question? Are we excited about the season ahead?
We haven't had as many
silence.
Digestives as you.
What?
No, that's not true. No, we don't.
I should point out, in Central Europe, at least, it is 10:30 at night. And it's 9:30 and can be any time of day or night for new mum Rose. Yeah. So that will explain that silence. I can see your faces. You're excited. You don't need to tell me, but verbalize it for the audience, maybe, on the podcast.
You know me, Orla. You know me. I'm always very excited. I'm excited.
Always very excited. Bubbling underneath the surface.
No, I'm excited.
You're like a swan, Richard.
I am.
Your paddling legs are really excited. Yeah. You're very cerebral on top.
I'm excited about Tour de France Femme because I think that's going to be great.
And we've got some plans for that. I might
Paris-Roubaix. Yes. You know, again,
I'm properly excited about Paris-Roubaix.
Especially now it's back on a separate day. It's now back on a Saturday, which is really good news. So,
yeah. No, if that was the only race all year, I'd still be happy. That's the one race I cannot wait for.
No, I have to say, and I'm really excited about Paris-Roubaix. Tour de France Femme, I'm kind of like, I'm excited for, a little nervous.
Curious.
It's a very, also I just feel like it gets very, very busy in the season, in the summer. And, you know, like we mentioned, like the squads are not massive. So I'm just kind of...
I think there'll be such interest around it, though.
But I'm kind of anxiously anticipating it. I feel like...
You want it to live up to it.
Yeah, I don't want the... You know, because it's such a crowded season of stage races that, I don't want the teams to be kind of spread too thin. And I think that they will send their best squad to the Tour de France. No doubt they will. But I guess I'm kind of, a little nervous about how it's all going to play out. But... Always excited. Mm. You can't not
bring it on 2022.
So we'll be creeping ever closer to the start of the Women's World Tour in Strade Bianche. And before that, obviously, we'll have that opening weekend in Belgium. It's all to get excited for. So I guess this is a perfect time for us to sign off. And as you said, Orla, it is creeping towards midnight now. So...
and I've still got at least half a packet of chocolate digestives to finish off.
So jealous of that.
Before bedtime.
I'm so jealous of that. So and it's been lovely to be back with you both and to have your company.
After to have you back.
It was, I think it was September was last time we were all together, so that's a long old time.
Wow.
People will be forgetting.
You look wonderful. Motherhood suits you. I'm delighted for you.
Oh, I don't know about that. Not sure about that. I feel like I've aged horribly. It was a picture I saw the other day.
Welcome to motherhood, Rose.
Well, I know, and it literally looked like, you know those old people wrinkle filters that you get? Literally looked like someone had put one of them on me. I couldn't believe it.
No. Well, you must have put a youthful filter on this one because you look banging.
Well, I'm going to spend all of the baby's university fund on skincare now. That's what I'm going
to
do now.
Well, yeah, you don't want them to have too much too early in life.
Oh,
no. Come to board with a silver spoon in their mouths. Make them fight for it.
Yeah.
And you can just look hot.
Yeah. Oh, great. Sounds perfect. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Great to have you back.
Oh, you're very welcome.
Still here.
Yeah, I know. I was going to say, you're just soaking in the atmosphere. Well, thank you. And thank you, Orla. And see you guys next time.
See you next month.